everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. Together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. We are off and running, and I think it's my favorite month of the year. I love October. It's Monday, October the 3rd, 2020. October is, well, where I grew up, along the shores of Lake Michigan, this was the time of year when the autumn leaves turned. That won't happen here in Tucson until probably around mid-December. But what does happen, and I'm looking forward to it, pretty soon the nights will be in mid-60s, lower 60s, and the mornings will be just absolutely beautiful. Perfect time of year here in Tucson, Arizona. The Buckmaster Show during the noon hour on 1030 KVOI, The Voice, trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website. We put up our podcasts. They're usually up there, thanks to Rose, who does all my podcasts. They're up a couple of hours after the conclusion of the program at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, and we certainly are encouraging folks to call in about our topic for the round, not the round table, but our Monday political face-off, it's school vouchers. The number on the live line is 790-2040. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. If you think this new, what's called empowerment scholarship accounts is a good thing, I'd like to hear from you. If you don't like it, I'd like to hear from you. 790-2040. Our Monday political face-off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Picked up a item that I had Moe and Corinne frame for me, and as usual, it comes back and it looks like it's ready to go up on the wall in any museum in the world. That's the kind of quality you get at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. And they have, well, as I like to say, they didn't get off the bus yesterday. They opened for business in 1985, so they know what they're doing over there. Our team of commentators today, to my right, Chris Ackerley, former state lawmaker, 22-year physics and math teacher in public schools, now assistant treasurer of the Pima County. Also with us, Dr. Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. This is like a rerun. You guys were so great last week. We brought you back again.
Oh, and thanks.
You know, I'm going to talk about, first of all, how was your weekend, Chris? What'd you do to try to relax after all that's going on over at your office? This is the busiest time of the year.
It is a busy time. So
everybody wants to, which is good. They want to pay their property taxes, and a lot of them want a receipt, which I think is a good idea, and you folks will gladly do it. I know we got ours in the mail.
We will.
Yeah.
But just keep in mind, it is going to be very busy for the next month. So,
and if you have a phone,
be patient.
Have a phone and want to
we'll get to you.
Well, you probably have a phone and you probably have a question. Call early rather than wait to the last minute. Don, how was your weekend?
You know, it was great. Think about what you just said. I went out running each morning and finally felt that nice coolness.
Was it there? It's starting,
in the morning,
right?
It's starting. The mornings are down into the 60s and just beautiful.
Isn't it funny the subtle changes that we noticed? And Don, I knew you grew up back east. Chris grew up here.
Here.
But Chris, you understand what I'm talking about, these subtle changes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, but one of the things I did was this. Every time it rains, after it starts to get cool, I get allergies bad.
Yeah.
And always happens getting in October. Mm-hmm. So that's what I got this weekend, bad allergies. But that's sort of the thing when you live here all your life.
All right. Well, let me set this up. And again, if folks have any questions or comments about school, what's commonly referred to as school vouchers, 790-2040. The Department of Education, Chris and Don, they just were inundated with last-minute requests to get funding for the first quarter of the school year. And the crush came after the Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, confirmed that Save Our Schools had failed to submit enough signatures to give voters the last word on the universal voucher plan approved earlier by the Republican-controlled legislature. Chris, was this so the people, the intent here was that voters would have had a say whether or not to move forward with this program?
Well, yes.
In its expanded now.
And it's expanded. So in Arizona, and it was basically a timing issue that they had run into because the legislature had ended their session so late. So in Arizona, the voters themselves have the right to review anything that the state legislature passes.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the session, when they passed this, Save Our Schools decided that they were going to attempt to reverse the expansion of the Empowerment Savings Scholarship accounts to basically universal expansion of it. And so they had a timeline in order to get signatures. They didn't meet that threshold. So the law goes into effect. There was a short timing period between when the law would have gone into effect, because it actually went into effect, I think, after the beginning of the school year, based upon the 90 days from the close of the legislative session. And then there was another week or two delay about whether, in fact, there would be an injunction in place because they had gotten their signatures to put it on the ballot. But they didn't, so the law goes into effect. And so you will see a...
I was going to say, Don, the Save Our Schools people, predominantly public education advocates, who feel this is going to hurt public schools.
Well, they do. And just talk about those folks. I have a lot of sympathy for them because the process was delayed, and they lost about 2 weeks in being able to get the signatures and get the totals because of the timing with the governor and the legislature. And second, this is a battle they've been fighting for a long time. And I've also heard that there's a lot of fatigue out there with having to go fight this every cycle. And so that's part of the problem, too. But the concern now is that it is, again, another blow to public schools, to funding public schools, and to really building public schools back up to the level that I think Arizona families deserve. You know, we're still 49th or so in school funding. We're in the bottom tier, whatever that is, and we're not seeing it. And the worst part of it is it's hurting the schools in the areas of greatest need, the lower socioeconomic areas, the most.
This program, Chris and Don, is formally known as the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, and this will allow the vouchers, which will average about $7,000, to be used by parents. And parents who homeschool their children would be able to use this.
Yes, they'll be able to use them on curriculum materials and outside programs. A lot of parents who homeschool their children have them enrolled in programs that actually do academics and sports type stuff in addition to whatever homeschooling they do, and they'll be able to use it to pay for those.
Until now, the vouchers had been reserved for students with special needs, foster children, who those in schools that were rated D or F, or children on reservations. There are currently about 12,100 students getting the state dollars. So now what we have, all of the, since the referendum to get that on the ballot failed, all the conditions are now gone, Don, and what we're talking about is what's at stake here, 1.1 million students who are in public schools have now the right to attend private or parochial schools with the vouchers of state funds.
They have the right, but they don't have the ability. Again, when you look at the idea of $7,000 being available to send your child to a private school, that doesn't cut it. Private schools, most of them in Arizona, cost far more than that. So unless you already have the means to send your child to private school, that doesn't change anything for most middle-class families. They can't take advantage of it. The families who can take advantage of it, the ones who are better off financially. So it essentially becomes a $7,000 gift card that wealthy families are able to use to send their kids to private schools, most of whom are already sending their kids to private school. That's something that was uncovered just in this past year by some good reporting. So it isn't a major shift from public schools to private schools. It's a major shift in tax dollars from public schools to private schools.
So the money, Chris, the spending, where does that, that comes from? The general fund. But there's also a formula for at public schools for they get a certain amount of money for each student, well, right? I mean, it's very
it is a very complicated system, and I have contended for a lot of years that the Arizona funding formulas for education are overly complex, and they lead to a lot of poor decision making in a lot of cases because they are so overly complex. But I think my friend Don oversimplified it a bit, right? Because one of the things that you have to keep in mind is if a student isn't attending a public school right now, then the cost of that student is not being calculated into the funding that is going to public school currently. The question then that you ask is, now that everybody going to a private school is eligible for an ESA account, right? Where is that money going to come from? And right now, that's going to come from the state general fund.
We'll talk some more about this because this really does deserve, I think, the whole half hour here on the Monday Political Face-Off. Presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, want to talk a little bit about our favorite place to go for breakfast, Mona's Danish Bakery. Home of the Danish Kringle. Someone, we were up at Mona's yesterday. What a fabulous breakfast we had up at Mona's yesterday. And Steve, the owner, was saying somebody called in and said they wanted to order two Kringles because they heard Bill Buckmaster talking about the bakery. And that's what advertising is all about. So that made me feel real good. And Steve was getting some good feedback about what we talk about. And I know, Don, you love going up to Mona's. I had a, along with my eggs and bacon and toast, I had a chocolate croissant, which I probably didn't need to, as they say, Chris, pile it on, right? A little bit overboard. You know, I did cut it in half and bring half home for this morning.
Well,
but
there you go. They
I
are
mean,
good.
What have you been going for lately?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because we're coming into the holiday season, and yep. My wife and I have, you know, looking at Kringles, and they are the best in town,
yep.
Without question.
Yeah. All right. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. The newly revamped website will be up. All the color pictures of everything on the menu. They do take Monday off. They'll be open at 6:30 tomorrow morning for breakfast. On Sunday, they open at 7. We'll take a break right here. More with Chris and Don right after this. And if you want to call us about what your opinion is on the vouchers, 790-2040. We would be happy to put you on the air. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. And at moesgallery.com, we're talking about the situation with the program formerly known as Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, allowing those vouchers averaging about $7,000. Pretty much all of the conditions are now gone. Chris Ackerley with me and Don Jorgensen. Chris, I think it's important to point out, as you did before, gave us, Don and I, a pretty darn good briefing about this and some of the history of this. And the reason you know a lot about it is because you were a public educator for 22 years and a state lawmaker. You said there are four aspects that we should keep in mind.
Well, school choice. People tend to bundle it all into one thing. Both advocates on they're advocating for and advocating against sort of bundle it all into one thing. And it's not. It's really four distinct different things in Arizona. The first thing is open enrollment, right? Students can cross district lines and go to schools in other districts and schools within their own district outside of their attendance boundaries.
Which we now have, right?
Okay. The second part of that is charter schools. There's a very healthy, strong system of charter schools in Arizona. And charter schools are publicly funded schools. And so there's no tuition to go to charter schools. And there's a healthy system. And it basically said, if you can build a better mousetrap, build a better mousetrap. Then there is tax credits, both private and corporate tuition tax credits. So you can pay tuition or donate to scholarship organizations and get a tax credit for those. And I'm fully in support of all three of those things. The last one is now the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts. And as initially proposed, Empowerment Scholarship Accounts basically said, particularly with students of high special needs, a lot of families are in a position where their child needs services. They don't have the capacity to handle and afford those services on their own, Right. So the really only option was is to send them to public schools and get services through the public schools. But it was enormously expensive and might necessarily not been the best match for that child's needs. So the argument being, and I agree with this argument, is take a portion of that money, provide it so that the families can directly pay for the services and programs that they need to best meet their child. Over the course of the years, it got expanded to other categories, deserving categories as well. And so this last expansion is basically say, okay, let's just make it available to everybody. There is some merit in that. And I don't think it will bring about the collapse of public schools. I think the vast majority of students in Arizona will continue to go to a public school through a traditional public school district. But this says to parents who homeschool their kids, now there are some funds that you can provide educational opportunities for your child. And if you're going to send your a child to a private school, because you're opting your student out of the public school system, there are now funds available to help offset the cost of that tuition.
What about accountability, Don Jorgensen? Who's going to be monitoring that $7,000 that goes to parents who homeschool?
Well, no one. Nor are they monitoring the results in private schools. So there's no accountability built into this with any of those options. Now, I don't necessarily oppose all of those options either. What Democrats are looking for and have always looked for is a level playing field so that the public school systems, whether they're located in the foothills or in the southern part of Pima County, have the funds necessary to provide quality education. And that doesn't happen. Chris mentioned there is kind of an offset that will always be there when you rely on property taxes. And I think there's been a shift away from that to some degree and relying on state funding. But as we said earlier, it's inadequate. In addition, there are demands placed on public schools that aren't placed on private schools or even charter schools, having to do with transportation, having to do with after-school activities, sports, for example. Public schools provide for sports teams. If you're homeschooling your child, you have the right to say to the nearby public school, take my kid onto the team and not pay for it.
I didn't know that.
Again, simplifying that as well. But if they offer those services, they have to take those kids in, and yet they still have the same overhead expenses that now they have to cover. And that's one of the issues with this. When you're taking students out of the public school system, let's say $7,000 per child, however many it is, you're not reducing the expenses of the public school by that same percentage, because you still have the same overhead. You still are paying the teachers, whether they're teaching 10 students in a class or 20. And so those are some of the components that make this, again, not a level playing field and are hurting public schools without without any accountability. We don't know if it's educating kids better. We don't know if it's more effective or more efficient use of tax dollars. There's no evidence of that. What we do know is that there are private charter schools and private schools making a profit from taxpayer funds.
And my concern is not that there isn't oversight of the private schools. It's that there will be. Because they're taking government money. And so I have some concerns about the mechanics of the ESA accounts and the way that the funding is all going to work.
So you're saying will open the door to more.
I think that inevitably you will see strings attached to the money, and they will creep into the private school system, and they might in fact diminish why parents chose to send their kids to private schools. But going back to one of the points that Don makes is the reality is that public schools are always going to face a different and unique set of demands. And the frustration for those of us who are on the more conservative side is to say, that is not a reason that we should be denying other kids or any kids an opportunity. The fact that we haven't gotten it to a level playing field doesn't mean that we should deny another group of kids opportunities that they could benefit from enormously. We do have to find a way, and I have always been an advocate for this, of adequately funding our public school system, strengthening it, simplifying the process. But the fact that there's work to be done in that area does not mean that we should deny other students.
All right. Good discussion. Final word, Don?
Well, yeah, no one wants to deny quality education to anyone. We're talking about wanting to see accountability to ensure that they're getting the best education possible, and that those that don't have the means to take advantage of these, gift cards for the wealthy, get the public education they deserve, and holding Republicans accountable, providing the funding necessary, not just shifting funding around.
All right. Don Jorgensen, Chris Ackerley, thanks, guys.
Pleasure. Anytime.
Good discussion. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Highly encourage you to pay a visit. If there's anything that you need framed, they can do a super job. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. And speaking of green things, the parking lot sale was so successful. They've still got some things that I think would tempt you. If you want to go buy green things, I encourage you to do it today. 3384 East River Road. It was a week-long sale still going on. By the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, beautiful 13-acre site. And their website is greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business is Zocalo Village. Their website, zocalovillage.com. Our live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line for our monthly border report with Keith Rosenblum, who knows a thing or two about the border. He's been back and forth over the border a zillion times, but more importantly, he's been writing about it and making all sorts of accurate observations about our border for many years. Keith, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to making yet more accurate observations about the border for the zillions of times that I've crossed it.
Well, Keith, I want to begin with this hack, a hack that happened of the... It sounds like there's a water fountain next to you or something.
What? I'll move away from it. There's just traffic on Grant Road in Tucson.
Oh, okay, yeah. Kind of just put that cell right up to your mouth there as you speak so we can get a good signal. The hack. Apparently hackers got into the Defense Department of Mexico. Yeah. And then everybody learned about President Lopez Obrador's problem. He had a heart attack, but I guess his health, all this stuff came to mind.
Well, yeah, it did. And I guess not revealing, if not revealing the truth is a lie, then he lied to the Mexican public. And Mexico today is Orwellian with its use of language, and not that we're different, but Mexico is especially so. And so he didn't level with the Mexican people. And that's the least, well, it's not the least of his worries, but actually what it does is it shows what he's willing to do. He's willing to cut corners. And right now he's in a lot of, he's in a corner anyway with so many issues in the country. You know, he's winding down here. Is it the midway or, yeah, through, year four, which means he only has, 2024, they have a new president. And there's lots of things that are mounting, lots of pressures from different parts of the world of public safety, military, and economy. So nobody would want to be in his position today. If you can see he's willing to cut a corner on something like his health, and the question really isn't so much his health, it's where else would he be willing to cut corners?
Wow, you are right by the intersection there.
I've moved away from that as well. Go ahead.
Okay. Now. All right. So any other really important stuff come out of that hack about the Mexican military?
Well, what you saw was that the military is not unified. You saw the Secretary of the Navy, and the Secretary of Defense having a battle between them over jurisdictional issues, over who's going to do what. You didn't have a revelation of the real issue, which is what the generals and what the secretaries of Navy and Defense have told the president, which is supposedly, because the documents themselves haven't been revealed, but supposedly is, if you keep pushing us on this Ayotzinapa case, which is the one of the 43 school teachers to be who vanished and were murdered in Guerrero State. If you keep pushing this, then maybe we'll just come off the streets entirely, which would be chaotic and would be a nightmare for Mexico as well. the big issue in Mexico right now is how much do you want to militarize public safety? In other words, the López Obrador, who came in on a really interesting anti-military stance, has gone the other way. He's gone 180 degrees now to being the biggest fan of the military. He's fed it all sorts of contracts that are unrelated to the military itself, tourism, managing the new railroad that I'm sure you'll be going to see soon, the Tren Maya, the Mayan train, which is in the southeast of the country. And he's done what a lot of countries in Latin America have done, which is to keep the military happy by keeping business headed its way. The military also runs the airports at Tulum, the new one at, what's it called, Felipe Ángeles in Mexico City, the new airport that has no traffic yet. And but the issue is, do you want to have the military supervising, running your domestic police forces? And that's where the country stands right now. What's come out, ironically or coincidentally, actually both. You don't get to say things are ironic and coincidental all that often, but both apply here. The military, just as the president has moved to having the military have an increased role in policing, which was the National Guard, they called the Guardia Nacional. It would be as if we took our state police and federal police and local police and combined them into one. López Obrador is pushing for that to become essentially militarized, or at least if not directly under the control of the military, then under controls of wings of it. And at the same time as he's been pushing for that, guess what? It's revealed that the military played a key role in the disappearance of the students at Ayotzinapa. So the question then is, well, hey, how much can we trust this military anyway if it's on the take? So he's having to face that. Then he's having to face these other kind of uncomfortable, fraudulent uses of parastatal companies, Segalmex, to buy grains and things like that. There's a lot of things that are just mounting on him. He manages to keep his poise. Again, I watched him at this morning's press conference, as you know by now. The man is on every day of 5 days a week, from 5:30 Tucson time until generally 7:30 or so. It can go longer, and it does go longer often, where he muses and he tells anecdotes. It's like one big happy session. He does keep a not a poker face, but he does just keep a kind of a happy face at these things. But the times aren't really that happy. There's lots of things going on right now, and any of these could be, to me, could be very serious. I don't want to say the demise of his government, but they could be real serious impingements on everything he's done, plus dramatically affect the election, which is just 18 months off. And he desperately wants Morena, his party, to continue to influence public policy for the next 6 years.
Keith Rosenblum with us. It's the Border Report. Keith, I'm looking, I have in front of me, I sent these over to you about an hour ago. I don't know if you had a chance to look at them. It's about Mexico's poverty rate by each of the Mexican states. And what couple of things jumped out at me. First of all, Chiapas, 3 out of 4 people live in poverty. The national poverty rate in Mexico is 43.9%. But when you get closer to El Norte, to the United States, you've got like Baja California, Nuevo León, Chihuahua, at under 25% poverty. So the question is living closer to the U.S. border translate into a better state of living for Mexicans along the border?
The answer is yes, mostly, and no, partly. Here's why. To understand those figures, you not only look at proximity to the border, but you look at megalopolises and big cities, and you look at rural populations. So what's happening in those states you're describing, you don't have the influx to the cities. You still have people living in the rural areas. A lot of us, I don't know about you, a lot of us have never been blessed to travel the United States and to see all of its agrarian, you know, areas, to see its rural areas. I've been to rural Kentucky and rural Indiana and rural places, and that's a different America, Bill. It's a very different America than what you have in the cities. So if you want to look at why Mexico City, Tijuana, the Monterey, Guadalajara, have all grown, it's not because people not because those cities have grown on their own or because there's been visit people from abroad. It's actually because those are beacons for jobs for people from rural Mexico. And those states that you just mentioned, Chiapas, Oaxaca, Guerrero, I don't know if you mentioned Guerrero, they have largely rural populations. They don't have the populations in the cities. In fact, in a lot of Mexico, you don't even have internet or media access. You don't have a lot of basic services in the rural areas. And Mexico has gone dramatically from being an agrarian country to being a industrialized, but there's still an awful lot of people who are on, in the countryside. In the countryside, nothing that applies. When you go to Mexico City, Bill, it's no different than if you're in Phoenix. Seriously. The quality of the services, the costs are a lot less, and you have absolutely everything from dining to theater to industry. It's when you go into these rural areas, and what you've described right now are the rural pockets of Mexico, as if people looked at the United States through a lens of, oh, I've been to Harlan County, you know, Kentucky, or I've been to rural Tennessee. Well, yeah, those don't have a lot in common with Memphis or with Indianapolis or the capitals that are right nearby. And those immigration patterns have not yet culminated. You still have a lot of people going from the countryside and the rural areas into the bigger cities.
And I want to point out Sonora, our direct neighbor to the south, it's just under the poverty rate is just under 30%. And I guess the maquiladoras do help offset some of that rural area you were talking about, the rural influence.
The income levels at the border are higher than the income levels in the interior. That's a rule, period. And those are the large part, the maquiladoras, the twin plants that are, you know, owned by foreign companies. They can be U.S., they can be Canadian, they can be German, whatever they are. And the wage base is high, so is the cost of living in places like Nogales or Ciudad Juarez or Tijuana or Mexicali. But as you go to Hermosillo and you go to the big cities now that are to the south, actually the wages are just as good or more so than in the border area. Again, the dichotomy is that of big city versus rural, not so much border versus interior, because there's plenty of people making really good money in Merida, you know, or in Guadalajara or in Puebla, or these other places that are 1,000 miles from the border or 2,000 miles from our border, but are the efficiencies of a large city. And so that's why I'm saying the answer is kind of yes and no. And where Mexico is right now, by the way, it's worth pointing this out because anyone who follows López Obrador is going to be critical of him in a million areas. But the one of the areas where he does get credit is he has kept the peso probably the most stable currency in the world next to the dollar through his entire administration. He's loved in an uncertain way in the economic world because the peso has not fluctuated at all. It has been a rock stable currency. The way the peso was for an awful lot of years before the 1970s when they had the kind of the first cycles of devaluations.
All right. Stay with us. I'm going to ask you why that is, why it is so strong after we take the break. It's Buckmaster on a Monday. It's our monthly border report with Keith Rosenblum. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios. Great weekend to go over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. This weekend, they've got an art fair going on in downtown Silver City. It's just a great time of year to be over in the Land of Enchantment as the autumn leaves turning in the high country. The aspens with that beautiful mantle of gold that they are wearing these days in the high country as we get into October. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the place to go before you do your three-hour drive over to Silver City. The website has all sorts of information about what to do, and there are all sorts of activities, many outdoor activities, and some great places to stay in Silver City. We continue with our monthly border report. Before the break, Keith Rosenblum was talking about how the Mexican peso is one of the most stable currencies in the world, right up there with now the very mighty dollar. And why is that, Keith Rosenblum? Why is the peso holding up so well?
You just don't know. You just, of all the people that you would have thought would have been a danger to the peso, you might have included Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who has done a vast amount of spending on social programs and who has had the unexpected thrill of seeing oil prices go to $100 plus per barrel during his years and staying there for quite a while. It's down below that now, but he has been thrifty. He's a miser, as a matter of fact. Mexico has been giving money to everybody, to kids for scholarships, the disabled. It's created a welfare system that it didn't have before, and everybody has a 2,000 or a 3,000 peso per month check. That's about 150 bucks that comes from the government. Well, okay, so with that money now is going directly to individuals. I know that because family members get it. Not everybody gets it, but students do and elderly do and handicapped do. Okay, so how did they do that? Well, they stopped spending money on a lot of the big infrastructure projects, where they just did, there hasn't been the same amount of road construction. Most of the cities are filled with potholes, but there's been just that balance. And so the president has done a good job. I think when we started having these conversations 3 years ago during his administration, the peso was right around 19 to the dollar. And today, if you go to Nogales, it'll be 19 and 1950 or 1990, which means that basically the spread, if you want to call it that, is less than 5%. That means that if you go with dollars and you want to buy pesos, or you go with pesos and you want to buy dollars, you'll be paying roughly 4.5 cents maybe for the transaction. Of course, the big banks do a lot better. They don't have that kind of take. But I've seen times where there's been a multiple peso spread, like it was 17 pesos buy and 20 pesos sell, which means that the take for the casas de cambio, you know, for exchange houses, was upwards of 10 or 15%. The airports still rip you off, but that's what they do. Anyway, the man just doesn't spend more than he has. And he, you know, and here you had Carlos Salinas and Jose Lopez Portillo and Luis Echeverria, previous presidents, and they had vast, horrifying devaluations where the peso lost half its value. So give this guy credit. You know, let's be critical of him for lying about his health. Let's be critical of him maybe of his handling of the Ayotzinapa case. Let's be critical of him in lots of areas, but let's not have it just simply a single brush that says that he's bad for the country. He's been quite good for the country in a bunch of ways.
And that's probably helped the strong peso, has helped with the standard of living, because if it wasn't real strong right now, some of those numbers we were telling and talking about earlier in the program would have been a lot higher.
Yeah, and I also want to caution you about poverty, because poverty is a relative term. The Mexicans aren't good at judging it anyway. Everybody's got some kind of safety net. The Mexicans don't have homeless like we do. I'm at Grant and near I-10 right now. I'm surrounded by homeless. And the Mexicans don't have it. You know, we could devote a program or more to that. Why don't they have it? Because the Mexicans have families that care, and families for whom pride is still a big thing, and they're not as mobile, you know, as ambulatory as we are. So to go measuring poverty, sure, you know, they don't have the diet that they would want, but I would be cautious about getting too immersed in figures like 30% or 40%. Yeah, they may not have late model cars, but they got cars. They may not have, you know, everybody has a house and a mortgage. No, but the parents do, and there's a bunch of kids living in little, you know, cabanas or casitas right there. So those figures in and of themselves should spook nobody.
Well, it's a very important point you bring up. I hadn't even thought about the homeless situation and the support system that the Mexicans have. And it gets back to that one word, Keith Rosenblum, family.
It sure does. I mean, it really does. And I see this all the time. I've spent more hours in traffic in Nogales than you've spent on the air. And I can tell you that that they, you know, you get a handful of panhandlers, beggars, just people who are disoriented, soup kitchens, that kind of thing. The Mexicans have soup kitchens. You know why? Because they're dealing with the people that we've deported. They're not dealing with people that arrived on rail and have nowhere to go. So the phenomenon of street person or the homeless or the vagabonds or the hobos or whatever name is du jour, is a fascinating one, and the Mexicans here get credit that we don't.
Okay, Keith Rosenblum, always a pleasure. Thank you, Keith. Stay safe.
My pleasure.
Keith Rosenblum with his monthly border report here on the Buckmaster Show. Tomorrow, we've got Margaret Regan talking with us about her monthly arts report. Margaret, the longtime Tucson Weekly arts writer. And let's see if a little bit of that magic that's been happening on Wall Street today. Last time I checked, the market was up big, big time. But tomorrow, when Shelley comes in, who knows? We'll be talking at 12:15 with Shelley, and who knows how the market might be reacting in about 24 hours. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of John, on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying, hope you have a great afternoon.